What is up, family? It is memes that can. What is up, family? It is memes that can save the world coming to you from the Propaganda Factory. On this beautiful Friday, we are doing our long form pod tonight as part of our Liquidate the Billionaires movement, in which we elevate pertinent voices who we have met along the way. And part of our movement, we are pushing solidarity in all forms. And part of that is solidarity in workers. And so we wanted to have a conversation today with Benjamin Henry. He works with SNAP and Medicaid and is a local VP in his union. And so we will bring him up and let him introduce himself a little more. Hey, Benjamin, hey. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I do all sorts of benefits. So mostly mine is elderly and disabled folks. I do this in Minnesota. The SNAP program stuff is pretty universal. So when I talk about it, it should be applicable to most states. When we talk about Medicaid, yes. Minnesota tends to be more generous than a lot of the other states. Some of what we do may not be applicable to other areas. But I also do and housing support long, for individuals.
How long have you been working, you know, with government assistance for individuals?
So I've been doing this work for about 10 and a half years. Prior to that, was working with disabled individuals at day programs and group homes. And so I've kind of had a life of service is kind of where I've been going with things.
Yeah, that sounds good. My audio is okay. I sound good right now. Just wanted to check real quick.
Yep. And are you able to hear me okay as well?
Yeah. Sound perfectly fine. Okay. So to get into it, and you also said that what was your union, what part of the trade is your union part of?
So we're
you know, like a union of trade specific, right?
Yep. We're AFSCME. So I'm a county worker. So it's the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees is what that stands for. And, I got involved with that about a year and a half ago. Kind of the driving force to that was the work has been so stressful for social workers, financial workers, child support workers. And we had a social worker that died by suicide. And the county disavowed any knowledge of it.
I'm sorry. We just, because of where we're recording, we do have to be just a little mindful. It's you don't have to worry about it because usually with the one-offs, it's no issue. And it's content warning for people. I'm sorry. It's just, you know, some things are heavy and we do need to just be a little mindful. But I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry to hear that. I'm sorry that that person, you know, man.
And so that kind of spurred me into action. And, you know, at that point I said, you know, that was kind of my red line in the sand and I had to start fighting for worker rights. I had already been fighting for our residents' rights as the president of the Minnesota Financial Worker and Case Aid Association. That's a professional organization that trains, networks, and advocates across all 87 of our counties. It culminates every year in a large conference where we invite the state to come and present on topics that they want. And then we present on some of the topics that we want and just try and help workers be able to better do their job and, again, advocate on their behalf to make sure they've got the resources they need to help these folks in need.
And you've been a municipal employee, you said, for about 10 to 12 years. Is that what you had said earlier?
Yeah, about 10 and a half years is when I started started working for the county.
And so, yeah, so what did you do before the county, that before you were working for the county?
Yep, so before the county, I was working with a day program. That's kind of, some people refer to it as an adult daycare. Really, it's just disabled folks come to a center, and we have different activities for them. So, you know, it could be as mundane as reading stories. It could be as big as creating music or going out to our state fair or things like that. And I worked in that field for about another 10 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, 20 solid years of your career, interacting with the people. And so this might seem like a strange question to you, but, you know, we hear conservatives all the time about the bootstraps and people not working hard. And so I would like to ask, do you think that a lot of the people that you interact with, do you think that they choose to be poor?
For the most part, no. You know, it's impossible for me to tell you, sit here and lie and say that there's no fraud in the system, but
sure,
to assume that to assume that everybody on benefits is frauding the system is just it's arguing in bad faith. You know, we have two full-time sheriff's deputies that we can send out at our will to investigate. And us as workers in these fields, we get just as upset as the public does when people are frauding the systems, because we want these to be for the people that need them, and we don't want bad actors coming in and ruining the reputation of them. So by and large, no, the people that I serve need the help.
Yeah, I would agree. Especially as someone personally, who has benefited from benefits in the past. I mean, we lived in abject poverty. We didn't have food stamps all the time, but we had SSI disability. I did have free lunch in school and things like that. But so, have you lived in Minnesota your whole life, or?
Yep, born and raised here. So never, you know, I travel on occasion, but for the most part, Minnesota's where I spend the majority of my time.
Wrong with that.
When you've got a state that's rated as high as ours is for quality of life, you know, there's not much incentive to move. Where am I going to go that's going to be a whole lot better, you know?
So. Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. My state's not the best state. We got a lot of problems, but we do have some things that we do have right, and just, you know, the natural beauty, something you can't necessarily replace. I know you got a lot of that up there in Minnesota. I haven't been there yet, but.
Yeah. And, you know, just talking about the programs, I have experience outside of administering them. Both of my folks needed medical assistance towards the end of their lives. They both passed away, last summer unexpectedly. So it's been kind of a healing journey for me this last year as well. But I know without those services, they wouldn't have been alive as long as they were.
Was it before or after they passed that you had got involved with your local union?
It was before they had passed.
Before they had passed. But you'd said what, you'd been doing that about a year and a half.
Year and a half. I mean, you know, I was a member of my union, but I wasn't very active. And the reason for that was because I was already involved with the other board, the financial worker board, and that eats up a fair amount of time too. But, you know, I just found that the leaders that we had at the time were not standing up for the workers enough. And so me and my president, Lisa, stood up and we started taking it back, and we started fighting back, and we've had some significant wins. We had a person who was wrongfully terminated that we just were able to get a six-figure settlement for. And anytime the county steps out of line and doesn't want to treat one of our workers right, we clap back. That's not to say, this is where another misconception comes with unions, that they just protect the bad actors. And that's not the case either, because there's been
Right,
Yeah.
correct.
There's been several times where, you know, the individual has been acting out of turn, and I've had to pull them aside and say, "Hey, you know, this is what they're saying. Is it true? Yes. Okay. Well, here's the actions you need to take to fix that. And if you don't, they're going to progress with discipline, and then we don't have any route to protect you." So, I mean, we're only
Exactly.
standing up for the injustices. It's not protecting the people who aren't effective workers.
I gotta ask you another conservative propaganda point. Are the dues breaking your bank?
No, yeah, I want to say we're at $26 or $27 a paycheck is what our dues cost us. And you know, for half of the time as a financial worker, I was working for a county where we were non-unionized, and the other half
Yes.
has been with the county that I'm at currently. In the non-union county, we were seeing 2-3%, just a small cost of living increase, where our union has fought for, I think we got these last 2 years, it was 3.75%, as well as we have step increases, you know, so as your years of service go on, you get a little bit extra,
Correct.
you know, until you cap out. So we were seeing raises of 7-8%. Versus the non-union counties, 2 or 3%. So I can tell you that I fully believe that you know, not only does the union protect you from bad managers, but it also makes your life a little bit more affordable because you keep up with the inflation a little bit better as well.
Right. No, yeah, I agree. Personally, I don't have access to a union in my state. We are an at-will state, like most of the South and most other conservative states. Unfortunately, that's why I wanted to bring someone up to sort of just give a little insight on the inner workings, the interaction. Especially someone who's the VP of their local chapter, who, like you said, is advocating for the workers. It's funny how this algorithm works, that we gravitate towards each other. You in a more formalized traditional role of advocating for the workers, in our movement here with the Liquidate the Billionaires movement, which is explicitly for the workers. I mean, there's no other way I see a solution to our plight is unless all of us band together as workers and aim for a better solution, collectively bargain a better solution, at least to compromise. I mean, that's the compromise, in my opinion.
Right. And, you know, I mean, it's been a target of Republicans for, well, since the Reagan era. You know, the most recent harmful decision was the Janus decision from the Supreme Court, which
Right.
said that folks no longer had to pay a fair share fee, but we still have
Right.
to represent them equally. So, in my union, for instance, we've only got about 45% participation, but those 45% are paying dues, and then the other folks, we are still mandated by law to represent them exactly the same, and we see no benefit, no support from those individuals, which gets very frustrating. So
Right.
I think I
And
think a big push
it's a
needs to
trap.
be,
They set up, they're essentially setting up a trap because they're doing that intentionally. And then it's a funny gotcha that they'll pose because it's like, oh, well, because unions already are fighting for all workers. It's something that kind of happens by default. But to have to include them, like you said, in some of the collective bargaining, like explicitly, it's almost like a gotcha because it's like for them, they get to say like, oh, look, they don't want to even fight for you. But realistically, they are fighting for you because if you're seeing that they have better, you're either going to join them or you're going to want better,
Absolutely. And you know, I think our low enrollment numbers was because a lot of people weren't seeing a whole lot of fight coming from the union. So my goal has been to make our actions much more public. So when we do successfully defend somebody, you know, we try and ask for their permission so that we can tout that and say, look what we're out here doing for you individuals, making sure that your bad managers are not ruining lives and ruining careers. I can't fathom why you wouldn't want to join it, but some of the things that I hear commonly, you know, my work, just like any other field, has about half strongly conservative individuals who think that unions are a waste and are actively voting against their own jobs, which makes no sense to me. And then they'll get upset that we back generally DFL candidates because they're fighting for more, at least more, for our way of life, although they're owned by the corporatists as well. So the other thing that I hear a lot is that people can't afford it. You know, they've got kids and every penny has got to be accounted for. And that's going to be a big issue coming up here with these tariffs of, what are we at, 145% from China? Is that what we're up to now? I think I heard.
Not only, right, correct, 145% for China. But not only that, I mean, you are a county worker, a county, you know, paid employee, essentially money coming, you know, I'm not exactly sure how your county's funding, but in some ways, probably through the state and whatnot. And you're administering federal programs, correct? Like federal programs that are potentially going to be on the chopping block here.
Well, I mean, the big, quote unquote, big, beautiful bill did end up passing Congress. So now they have to align with the Senate and see if they can pass that thing. But you're looking at $880 billion in cuts to Medicaid over the next 10 years, as well as $230 billion in cuts to the SNAP program. Now, for Minnesota, that equates to about $1.7 billion a year that goes to help low-income, disabled, and elderly folks.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's just Minnesota. I mean, that's, you know, billions of dollars in each state essentially is getting wiped out. I mean, I don't know if that's what MAGA voted for. I don't necessarily think they understand. I mean, red states, especially Minnesota, you know, it's a lot of rural. So that's why they're getting a lot of that money. But, you know, red states, especially, they're going to be demolished by this. Even Texas and Florida in their beautiful glory, still a lot of rural area. You know, even in the urban areas, I mean, this is going to hit massively. I mean, I'm not sure about your state. That's why I kind of wanted to bring it up. But, you know, my state, many other states are announcing layoffs in the state government to respond to these, cuts in the federal government, because the money is not going to be flowing to the states anymore. People don't realize that the states are oftentimes a very large employer in each, you know, state. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, if 100% of the people were working for the state, you know, in theory, that would be horrible. But, you know, having 20, 25% of your people working for the state isn't necessarily bad, because all kinds of things need to be administered. Whether it's help with federal programs like you do, you know, whether it's road upkeep, whether it's drainage and, you know, building up and all kinds of things. There's so many things that we don't even think of that municipalities need. And people aren't even realizing that these cuts are going to directly affect their lives.
Well, and I mean, you know, even in the best of times where the COVID money was flowing in, just to give you an idea of the need, especially with the baby boomer population starting to age out of the workforce now and become more disabled, we have programs that are called waivers. Right. And what those are it's extra help from Medicaid to help a person stay in their home versus having to go to a nursing home or assisted living or some other more restrictive setting. So it'll pay for things like if somebody needs a ramp put on their house, or if they need a lift so that somebody can get them in and out of bed, or Meals on Wheels for people who are homebound delivering meals. And state law in Minnesota says that an assessment for those programs needs to be done within 20 business days. Right now, our state, seven metro county average, and then kind of the suburbs areas, anywhere between 6 and 8 months wait list just to get a screening. So we're already out of compliance with the law before any of these cuts take place, which means we have people passing away waiting for services. And it breaks my heart.
And in America, yeah. You know, and that's part of the reason, man. That's part of the reason we're so fired up in the Liquidate the Billionaires movement, because this is America. I can understand if we were talking about China, Vietnam, or some other country in some other place. This is the United States of America. Country in some other place. This is the United States of America. Elderly, disabled people, people in need, all because of propaganda that we have, you know, people collecting food stamps and doing whatever. They just want to collect food stamps. The only people, all right, the only people that are sitting around collecting money, not doing anything, are the billionaires, are the landlords. You know, we have been so propagandized, even against unions. I mean, I'm sure that you, like you said, there's so many people who are against it, and it's such a silly concept, because you have to think your employer has a union. I mean, even in your case, your municipal government has an association of municipal governments in the state, and they all get together and they talk about what they're doing and blah, blah, blah. Every business industry has a union, whether it be a state business organization, a chamber of commerce, some industrial group that they've created, you know, for their interest. They all have unions, but when we want to do it, it's dirty, it's bad, it's lazy. Like you said, it's to protect the bad workers that don't want to do anything. There is so much propaganda behind it. And that's really what I like to point out here, is the propaganda that we're being fed, so that we can decolonize our minds, we can help decolonize our fellow workers, because only through solidarity will we prevail in the workplace, in politics, in the survival game of life, only through solidarity together. In the first place that we can try to experiment with that is the workplace.
And that's why one of our main slogans is divided we beg and collectively we bargain. You know, it's true that if we only have an individual mindset and we don't have a seat at the table for making decisions on our work and our benefits and our pay, we're at the whim of the employer. And more often than not, businesses are not pro worker. You know, they want to get as much work from you for as little cost as humanly possible.
Exactly. You know, and people don't realize, especially in America, our country founded on slavery. The Three-Fifths Compromise literally put in so that the slaveholders would pony up and form a country, founded on free labor. And then we evolved into the sharecropping model and dirt poor wages in the factories. They replaced the plantation. They gave us the mortgage. They replaced the company store. They gave us the corporation. And now we exist in a world in which everything is the plantation and everything is the company store, outside of small businesses interacting with each other. But even then, when you get to the root of it, you have these soul-sucking billionaires, these mega corporations fighting us, sucking, literally taking everything we have and returning it to the shareholders. That's why collective bargaining, like you say, unionizing, is one of the only ways that we can legally, even though they fight us every tooth and nail, every single way, you know, is one of the ways legally that we can try to protect ourselves and get a little bit more of the pie. But again, I want to point out That is the compromise. We have been trying to compromise for so long. That's why we're launching the propaganda factory, because we're saying we can only compromise so much before we have to get unethical, before we have to try the same means that you are using against us, you know? And that's any means necessary for these profits, any means necessary. You know, they don't care about our lives, our holidays, what our children have going on. They want us there slaving, you know? It's a shame.
And that doesn't even include the discussion about the for-profit prison system that uses slave labor to manufacture goods. And
that's,
now we're
that's
working
the cherry on top. That's the cherry on top, because think about it. The billionaires are coming for everything we have. They're coming to take our houses, to take our cars, and if we don't play the game just right and we lose it all, we're a failure. All right, so now we all failed. We're all under the bridge, holding hands, singing Kumbaya. I don't know. I don't know what they think we're going to do, but let's just say in this billionaire fantasy, we're all under the bridge, holding hands, singing Kumbaya. They're still going to come for us to put us in the for-profit prison to return more value to their shareholders. They will not stop. The billionaires are belligerent against us. They will not stop.
And I don't know how to tell people and how to convince them that even those of you that think you're in the middle class, you're six bad months away from the soup line yourself, versus you are so much closer to homelessness than you are to billionaire, and you will never be one of those elite classes. So I can't understand why the workers are voting for these terrible agendas that are just ruining the little bits of safety net that we had left. You know, after World War II, when
it's
FDR
not even
came
about
in,
trying to,
yeah.
Right. Continue.
They want to get rid of. They want to ruin the New Deal. They don't like Social Security. They don't like Medicare. They don't like Medicaid. They don't like food stamps. They want it where if you can't provide some sort of value for some sort of company, you just wither away and pass.
And you know, that's what's so crazy about it to me, because. And I've started asking these questions, and they get so upset. Conservatives, they need their safe, coddled spaces. They don't want any hard questions asked. But I'm done playing that game. So I get right to them, and I ask them, what type of profit, all right, what type of margins do you think Jesus would have been running on that fish and bread? All right? What type of profit margins do you think Jesus would have been running on that wine and water? All right, on them healing services, do you think that the disciples were running a health insurance company and denying claims for Jesus's healing services? You know, no. So, and they get so upset. They're like, oh, you want to make it about religion. You want to do these things. And I'm like, no, because I was not radicalized by Karl Marx, my friend. I was raised a conservative Christian. I was radicalized by Jesus Christ because he told me to feed homeless people. He told me to house homeless people, to help poor people. He said, if you have a little bit, give a little bit. If you have a lot, give a lot. Do everything that you can to make the world a better place. At least that's what I took from it, you know?
I grew up with similar ideals. You know, I was very involved. I'm former Lutheran. I say all the perks, none of the consequences of the Catholics. But you know, we did when the North Dakota Fargo floods happened, we went up there to help rebuild. And I remember one of the things that really struck me was somebody had spray painted on the side of a flooded building. It said, "Home sweet home? ? What home?" And that just kind of drove home kind of that service aspect. My father growing up he was one of those crazy Christmas lights decorators, and then he would go out and stand on the driveway as Santa Claus and collect for the food shelf growing up. And we would stand out there, my brother and I, as his elves to help. I was a volunteer ski patrol. You're not going to like this one. For a couple of years, I was a volunteer police reserve officer too. And I
It's
learned the error
okay.
of my
It's
ways
okay,
there,
bro.
but
And hey, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. You know, because
so I
you
mean
do it,
service.
a lot of people, they do it for the good of their community, you know?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was mostly, assisting stranded vehicles and things like that. It wasn't the bad
Right.
aspect of policing. So,
Right.
but yeah, and I mean, I've just kind of carried that service and activism into my, 40s now going on, or I'm in my 40s, and with these people waiting for these services, I took the time and I hand signed 213 letters and sent them to every legislator in Minnesota, as well as the governor, as well as the commissioner of the Department of Human
Right.
Services. I received one response out of 213 letters. Our representatives are not working for us anymore. They're not answering to us. They feel they're above us, and
No, no.
it's just another part of liquidate the billionaires. We've got to get this money out of politics
Exactly.
so that the representatives start working for the people again.
That's exactly it. And I have to ask because I'm curious personally. And because you've displayed a life of service. And so I wanna always preface because when I ask people, it's never like a gotcha. It's never like, but it's to let people know that there's no certain requirements to do anything in life. Like you just, you do what you can. And so I'm just asking, like, what's your highest level of education?
I've got a
If you don't mind me asking.
bachelor's degree is what I have.
Okay. I'm just curious because, I mean, I meet a lot of tradespeople and whatnot. Very successful, especially in that HVAC, man. Love that HVAC. But actually, we'll cut a quick promo real quick. This is brought to you by the Propaganda Factory. We're never taking any money from any billionaires. We're not asking you for any money. We are working every day to make high class propaganda for you so we can get the billionaires' money from the advertising revenue. So this ad that you're hearing is actually you. You created this ad. This is listener funded propaganda, also funded by the MAGA bots, the Elon simps, the landlord wannabes. We farm their engagement, we take the money, and we work for you, the working class people. So thank you very much. but yeah, I always ask because let people know, because like I said, we meet a lot of tradesmen, a lot of HVAC, a lot of AC, I mean, a lot of plumbers and things like that, that have worked very hard and still, especially with the unions and things, electricians are bigger than the unions. And we really just need more of it, in every capacity, because that is how you get action on the ground whenever you need things to be done. You need the people who are building America, not the people who are sailing around on the mega yachts. That's the problem with Congress, like you said. It's part of the Liquidate the Billionaires movement because everyone in Congress is a millionaire, except, maybe one or two of them, but they're all millionaires funded by billionaires. And so, how can we, the working class people, get any reprieve? Because no matter who we elect, we are simply choosing, how hard or how the billionaires are going to get to attack us. That's literally the choice we're making is how they get to attack us. Is it full throttle or is it, eased up a little bit, but they're still coming on every front every day,
We're stuck with the two-party system in America,
I agree.
and at the federal level, there's not much we can do about it. But at the local level, that's where we can start making more of a difference.
I
I
agree.
just went and spoke with I oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I was going to ask you about who where you went and spoke. Was it Monday?
Yep. So I on oh boy, what was it? I think it was Wednesday. I went and
Oh,
spoke
Wednesday.
with the chair of the Minnesota DFL who was going on a listening tour, and we had about
And
115 people
the
attending.
DFL for the audience, what's the DFL? I'm sorry.
Oh, the Democratic Farm Labor Party. And the
Yes.
Democratic Farm Labor Party has lost the farmers and has lost the laborers because they've ignored us. They haven't been working for us, and I saw a lot of anger towards being ignored in this meeting, and I felt it as well. I believe at this point in time, the D next to somebody's name is a poison pill that a lot of
Yes.
rural Americans can't swallow. So I've been trying to
Yes.
encourage the DFL to back an independent people. We're going to have to get away from that view. Now they can caucus with the
Well,
Democrats, but
this is the thing, actually, because this is my pitch, which I feel like, frankly, is a little bit more palpable, because it's a hard sell, especially when you have the two-party system, to have a third person come in as an independent and be able to make it through. It's just a tough sell. So, with that being said, what the Liquidate the Billionaire movement doing is we're attacking you on all fronts. And part of that is we're essentially going to poison pill the Democratic Party. We are going to make it to where we're so radical. And we are explicitly saying that if you allow the Democrats to get any power, that is, it will be bad for the billionaires. And we will starve the current, apparatus of funds, or at least they'll be having to funnel money to all the opponents that we'll be raising. We already have about seven or eight across the country so far in various offices, and that's not the only thing that we're doing, but this is just one pincer of the attack in our multi-pronged approach that we are going for. And so with that, we should be having some trial runs in the next cycle. And again, this is not a political organization. We're not a PAC. We're not anything like that. We're not taking any sort of donations or whatever. Our subscriptions are for propaganda. You're paying for propaganda, just akin to a newspaper, things like that. We're essentially a media and technology service. But with that being said, we poison pill the Democratic Party to where we make it to where all the billionaires have to go to the Republicans, that that will be their only safety, that we don't care how ethical you think you are, we don't care how good you think you are, that no matter what, we are taking almost everything you have. And if Americans are scared by that, it actually is okay, because we're going to be so provocative and just blast propaganda on every front that it's going to be just like the Trump show. We're going to be on everything because it's going to be so crazy, and the things that are going to be being said is going to be so wild and so radical that everyone's going to be talking about it all the time. We see this a lot, not only with the content that we produce, but when we ourselves go out into the magosphere and participate in these debates, it's very easy to dictate the conversation, to completely shift their sense of gravity as to what is real and what is not. And so I know that as we are ramping up with our Liquidate the Billionaires movement, which, Mr. Union, a little bit of a part of, we're fighting for you every day. So we got a quarter million sick left radicals so far. And see, just by that verbiage, that's why we call it the propaganda factory, because they're gonna, no matter what, we could be giving them the best facts from the most reliable source, and they would call it lies. So guess what? Everything we say is propaganda anyway. We are sick left radicals because that's what they're going to call us anyway. Just like you said, the Democrat is a poison. So no matter what, we are sick left radicals by default. So guess what? No matter what you call us, it doesn't matter. We're claiming we're communists by default. So it doesn't matter that you call us that. So all of that is disarmed. Now we can talk about solutions for America, solutions for the working class, which starts with organizing your workplace, because again, that is the safest legal way that we can defend ourselves against the belligerents right now.
Well, that's a better plan than I had. My goal was just at every wedding when they play the Cupid Shuffle, just to edit the song so it only says to the left. I thought maybe that might shift some people over, but
yeah,
no.
Maybe lucky. You know, we gotta try. Hey, listen, I will never fault somebody's attempt at swaying working class minds. So whatever you think is possible, we gotta try it, because we're in any means necessary type battle. So we have to try everything that is possible. We have to think outside the box. And if we got to spin the Cupid Shuffle, we'll spin the Cupid Shuffle.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, that's really where the idea of, again, just at the local level, just trying to win back some of those people. Don't have the D next to your name, because again, that's the poison pill right now. Get those
right
people
now,
in there. Get them to be effective in performing for the people and showing a benefit for the people, and then slowly drag those people in and further to the left. It's left aside. When I talk,
yeah,
even when I talk with very, very conservative people, which I encounter quite a few of them. I live in a very conservative town and a conservative area of Minnesota. When you talk about, like, man, don't you think it's ridiculous that you've got to pay the first $3,000 of your health care, even though you've already paid, $1,200 a month in premiums? Yeah, man, that's terrible. So
exactly.
Don't you think it would be great?
Right.
Don't you think it'd be great if, you know, if we could just go to the doctor when we were sick and not have an insurance company tell us whether or not the treatment our doctor wants to give us is going to be allowed? You know, when you start phrasing
exactly
it like that, you find very little resistance to those ideas.
Right.
The
Not
resistance
only that,
comes, well,
but you know, right, exactly. I don't want communism. Mm-hmm. I don't want socialism. I agree completely, because when you ask them why they want tariffs, why they want an external revenue service, they talk about how they want the world to pay for all the stuff that we have. And I'm sitting there and I tell them straight up, that sounds like communism. It sounds like you want a bunch of stuff for free. You just want to sit around and collect money. He's like, no, you know, I'm still going to work, blah, blah, blah. I was like, no, yeah, that's communism, bro. You want the world to just pay for America's stuff. Just us to sit around and get everything for free. You know, that's communism, buddy. And, you know, that's why I'm starting to use those words, because they're so provocative and they immediately shakes people. It's almost like the art of negotiating. Whenever you are trying to negotiate a deal on a price and you give them an anchor price, like, you know, you hit them with such a low ball that they fundamentally start to question what even is the price of the thing. You know, you take their reality and you bring it where you want it. And then you start to work it from a different angle. You know, that's our approach. And it's very successful, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you'd be surprised how many times I've heard in my career, people who are receiving benefits say, well, you know, those people on welfare. I'm like,
yes,
sir or madam,
yes.
Hate to break it to you, you are on, yes, welfare. So
yeah, you know what's crazy, my grandpa was like that. I was raised by my grandparents. My grandpa was disabled by the time I was born. We lived on Social Security disability, and he was actually like that with food stamps and stuff. He would make comments about them buying with the things that they buy and things like that. And I'm like, dude, you know, now listen, don't get me wrong, I actually don't necessarily think soda and things, I don't want to police poor people, but to an extent we shouldn't be allowing them to buy poison. That's just fundamentally, that's kind of very morbid that we allow that, and Coke has lobbied that's a thing and propagandized that, you know, that should be a thing. But again, you know, my grandpa, Social Security disability, Medicaid or Medicare, I forget which one's for the old disabled people, but you know, that's how he paid for his medicine, and he still had some of that sentiment, you know. I mean, and not to derail it a little bit, but this man was so conservative. You know, I was literally raised to think Obama was the Antichrist. You know, I literally thought I wasn't going to be able to get my driver's license because Obama's second term was when the world was going to end and whatnot. It's crazy times, you know. I mean, that's how conservative Christian I was too. That's how you know, I was raised. And so even though now I'm deviated a little, it's still fundamentally that's where my ideals are based from, because that's, you know, that's what formed my view of the world. And so yeah, just a tidbit there.
Yeah, and you know, it just bringing it back around to these folks again, they're not getting rich off of our programs. You know, we have an adult
Right.
cash program that is for individuals who are kind of in that transition period where they're too disabled to work, but they haven't been approved for
Right.
Social Security yet. It's a $350 per month benefit. And if they get a back payment from Social Security, they have to pay
They
that
have to
money
pay it
back
back.
so that we have that pot available for other folks who are in that situation. You know, SNAP for a household of one, if you have absolutely no income, you're maxing out at $292 per month.
Correct,
And
which is nothing. And
that.
that's part of what we're pitching here, is that everyone should get that by default. You know, every American should get $400 or $500 by default. And if you don't need it at the end of the year, you send it back, you know, then we give a little more to the people that need it. You know, we start with the equalization, and then, you know, rich people will send their money back. They'll get their little tax credit or whatever. But, you know, by default, everyone should get food. This is America, you know.
Yeah,
Look,
absolutely
buddy.
nobody should be dying of hunger in Europe.
Right. We're gonna have to wrap here. I do appreciate your time, and we will be chatting more in the future as I learn more about your movement in your area and try to keep up to date with you as some of these cuts are coming down and affecting local and municipal areas.
Well, hey, I very much appreciate you giving me a platform to come and talk to at least some people. I see the numbers haven't been huge in here, but you
Yeah,
know,
but it's
anybody
okay.
that
I,
I
you know, yeah,
yeah.
we're sharing to all of our platforms, Facebook. We're going to be posting snippets on TikTok. This is getting posted as on our podcast, which is available on all platforms. We've been seeing good traction on that. So yeah, that's what it's about. You know, it's about elevating working class voices, people who are in the trenches, just so we know that everyone that's a sick left radical, you know, might not actually be a sick left radical, that we actually just want poor people, because we're all poor, actually. You know, I'm not to insult anybody, but if you're showing up to work every day, you're poor, buddy. Just like me, I'm poor too. But you know, we just want a better lives for each other.
Yeah,
But
I
I'm gonna go
agree.
ahead and
Well, I'll keep fighting for all of my residents in Minnesota, and you keep up your good work, and we'll keep in
I
touch.
appreciate it. Yep, absolutely. I'll be seeing you.
All right. Bye-bye.
And with that, tonight we will conclude our Propaganda Factory podcast. Again, just to cut a little ad for y'all, this is Memes That Can Save the World in the Propaganda Factory. We got about 250,000 sick left radicals on all platform. We're asking you to join us. You don't have to be a paid. You can just be a free by simply liking, follow, commenting, sharing, engaging all of our content in every way, making sure to boost our propaganda machine when available. We do have paid subscription available. Our paid subscriptions will be capped at 100, 1,000, 10,000. We will be launching our contracting service here. Hopefully by next week, we'll be starting to bring on our first contractors for our sick left radical payments. We're making all of Fox News's worst dreams come true. So again, Memes That Can Save the World, coming to you from the Propaganda Factory. Please stay safe, stay subversive, liquidate the billionaires, liberate the food. Thank you, and have a great night.